Inner Hall of Life. Welcome to the Inner Hall Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual feminist hoe who lives in New York City, whose pronouns are they, them, she, and her. And who am I here with?
Akupa, pronouns she and her, your favorite black, bald, mental health therapist.
Yay. Every episode of the Inner Hall Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're talking about cyborg sex hands. Get into it. The Constitutions of Men Who Wrote the Constitution, a song about masturbation, I think, HSV2 and open relationships, abortion safe havens, trans-affirming healthcare, becoming a straight-up felony, and much, much more.
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising or tweet us at InnerHoeUprising without the G on Twitter. We're also at Inner Hall Uprising on Instagram and Facebook.
All the things, all the places. Get into it. Talk to us. Let's get into our first segment. It is called Fuck Is That Sound?
Hey, ain't nobody trying to hear that bullshit. Oh.
And it is an analysis of horny and or problematic songs from yesteryear. Who has a song for us? Which I haven't heard in a minute.
Yes, this has been sitting in my heart. On Instagram, everyone uses this one that's like a... It's like a mosh of this song and another one.
Okay.
I can't remember it, but that it's been playing in reels over and over. And I was like, let me go listen to the original song because it's been a minute too. So the song we're talking about is Oops by Tweet. I know y'all remember that pop, that bop. It debuted in February of 2020. Oh, no, not 2022. Sorry. It debuted in February of 2002.
20 years ago.
20 years ago. On Tweet's debut album, Southern Hummingbird. It was produced by Timbaland. We already talked about one of his songs.
We did.
And written by and featuring Missy Elliott. We also talked about one of her songs.
I think we talked about Missy Elliott twice, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so repeat offenders in this one. I'm excited.
And this actually, this analysis segues into another Missy Elliott song that I want to review as well. So we're going to be here from
not the Missy pivot. Yeah. We got to get her on the podcast. I want to interview her about these songs.
But she's iconic. Like, though.
No, love her to this day, obviously. But like, we got to chat. We got to chat.
All right. So we'll get into it with the first verse. You know what I did last night? I came home. Say around a quarter to three, still so high, hypnotized in a trance from this body, so buttery brown, and tantalizing. You would have thought I needed help from the feeling that I felt so shook. I had to catch my breath. Oops, there goes my shirt up over my head. Oh my, oops, there goes my skirt dropping to my feet. Oh my, ooh, some kind of touch caressing my legs. Oh my, ooh, I'm turning red. Who could this be? So when I was a child and I heard this song, I thought that she was being sexually assaulted by a ghost.
Oh, wait, cool. Not your brain always takes it there. You be making up
my
stories.
Brain always.
You should write. Takes it you should there. Start writing for a living because your imagination be on dead.
I wanted to be a writer when I was a child because I was wild. The brain was there as a child. The imagination. I never heard the fact that she said she was high. And it's like, she's just sitting here talking about something is touching her. And I wasn't quite sure if she was enjoying this touch or if she wasn't. So my brain was like, she's not consenting to this. She's being sexually assaulted in the ghost. Okay. Because the second verse goes, I tried. But this thing was happening to me. Swallow my pride, let it ride, and party. But this body felt just like mine. I got worried. I looked over to the left, the reflection of myself. That's why I couldn't catch my breath. So it was her or it was a vampire because you can't see vampires in the mirror. So I don't know what
I thought you were going to say. It was a ghost that looked just like her.
Nope, it was vampires. This is where my mind went to. So when I became of age and realized and heard the theory that this was a song about masturbation, like she was high on E and masturbating, I was like, well, that makes more sense to my adult brain. Oh,
okay, I didn't even know that the theory was that she was high on E. I just thought, well, when I look in the mirror, I began horny. So, but not when this came out, though, because I was very young.
Not when, exactly.
Yeah,
not
I don't really.
We were eight. We were
maybe
seven.
I thought it was about masturbation, but maybe I was just singing along to it. I don't think I had like any sort of theory for the song until I got into adulthood.
I heard what she was saying, and I said she's engaged in something with a ghost and or a vampire, and I need to understand. So when I got older and heard that this was the theory was is that she was high rolling on E or something, because it makes you very touchy and that she, you know, she came home 3 a.m. and was like, I'm feeling myself. I was like, okay, that makes sense.
But then the hours though.
Them doobie hours when you come off a party or something drunk at high, I'm fucking myself.
Yeah,
for myself. Like,
yeah,
those are the vibes. So as I was pulling this up, I encountered a tweet from Missy Elliott, the person who wrote the song. She tweeted this in January of 2021, 20 years later, and Missy says. It was a tweet from someone
who now also has a suspended account.
Account.
So it was there. What the fuck yesterday. Were they talking about?
But they had tweeted that they too had learned that the theory was it was about masturbation. Mm-hmm. And Missy Elliott quote tweeted and said, hashtag fun fact, this song was never about masturbation. It was always about her appreciating her dark skin, self-love.
It was both, Missy.
When she looked in the mirror. It was the listeners that thought it was about sex and ran with it. And we just let the consumer's mind create what they wanted. Missy Elliott, I just read these.
This is the same bitch who wrote Pussy Don't Fail Me Now. We know you nasty girl. We know it's about that. You're not gonna gaslight me, okay? The gaslighting is done with Shaggy. We're stopping that.
Okay.
We know what it's about, Missy. It's about both.
The shirt went up over the head. The skirt dropped down. Okay. Actually, as I'm reading it, I could be like, if you're high on E, it is them appreciating themselves.
But she's not even talking about E. She's just like, oh, she looked in the mirror and was like, I'm a beautiful bitch, which she was doing that, but she was high and she was masturbating.
She was still so high. She was still so high. But yeah, so I wanted to bring that to the table because I laugh at the fact when I think about that is what my childhood mindset. My childhood mindset. We got ghosts, werewolves, and vampires, girl.
Oh no, not a spooky bitch.
It was Twilight before Twilight even happened. I was like, here is a love triangle. Hell. Okay.
That would be interesting. Somebody should write a song like that too. I watch a movie.
But yeah, let me know if y'all feel like Missy gaslighting us. Because if you agree, if you two think it's masturbation and she's trying to play cute, let me know. Because I can stick with the masturbation theory now. Or I can always go back to my original theory, okay? Like, I don't have no problems with it.
Not your original theory.
I'm fine with that. Sleep up.
What the fuck was I going to say? I don't even remember now. Oh. If it is, like, and I do think that that's a part of it, and like, you know, like representation of dark-skinned women in music was, it's rare now and it was rare then as well. So like,
rare then. Mm-hmm.
It was very purposeful that Missy wrote this song for a tweet. And I do think that that played an element in it, but it was also an extremely sexual song. Like it wasn't just appreciating aesthetic beauty. It was like, ooh, like tantalizing is in it. Like my shirt's coming off.
It wasn't brown skin girls of the 2002, okay? Like, that's not what it was, Missy. You're not going to sit and tell me it was. This was a very sensual song. Right. The beat, the music production, all of it. You're not about to...
Because I could see, obviously we're not in school anymore, but I could see, like, kids these days, although, like, problematic, Beyonce, why did you write that song? Singing brown skin girl in, like, a fifth grade class? A fifth grade class was not singing Oops by Tweet.
We were not singing Oops by Tweet. We sure the hell was not. They wouldn't listen to us dance to it. They
not
wasn't
my
letting
mom and dad showing up. So, what the fuck? All right, now we gotta pull you out of the school.
On stage talking about, oops, there goes my. They were like, PTA meeting now. Now.
Oh, Missy tried it. Missy tried
Call the chancellor. What is this?
That is fucking funny. That is funny.
Oh, I'm sorry. We got to back up because this is the, there was another tweet. There was a comment under that tweet. I'm sorry. I had to include that. Oh, yeah. So someone replied to Missy's tweet and it says, Miss Elliott, Missy, cut out all that fibbing. You know, good and hell well. So now 1 Minute Man was about a dude running a foot race and I cackled because now we have to do 1 Minute Man.
That's
we have
to do it. That's really funny.
So now you're going to tell us. We have to do 1 Minute Man because that video was also something else.
It really was.
With Ludacris, we got to do it next.
What a childhood. What a fucking childhood.
What? This is what they was pumping into our heads and they're surprised we have this podcast. Like, are y'all been
That's
surprised?
A really good point. That's a very good point.
Here I am.
These are actually my origins. This is my villain origin story. 2002. What a time.
No, 2000. What a time. All right, okay. Now we can move on.
All right, well, let's let the people know that for the low, low of $2 a month, you can support your fave queer black feminist-led sex podcast and have access to the weekly content, hangouts, and resources that we put up for you on Patreon. And for the price of $5 a month, you can have access to our monthly patron-only episodes. If you're not down with that and still want to support us monetarily, not momentarily, but hopefully that too, you can hit up our PayPal. Links to both our Patreon and our PayPal are in the show notes, and thank you to everyone who donates to this podcast.
We appreciate y'all.
Exactly. All right, let us get into our next segment.
Just another smooth exercise in political manipulation, deceit and deception, callousness and indifference to our individual problems, and the disgusting playing of divisive politics.
This segment is Politics. It's the segment where we talk about legislation or public officials that affect sex and relationships, LGBTQ folks, reproductive rights, and or sex workers. So a little bit of backstory for this segment. We live in New York City, in case you haven't gathered that, and are directly impacted by the politics of New York and New York City. And we have the most likelihood of affecting change in that region. So we'll more often than not zero in on that region. We hope that you are politically engaged wherever you reside. Where the money reside. Anyway, okay, so I want to start off. So we're going to talk about, I guess, the aftermath of this Roe versus Wade thing. And I'll explain that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we're going to start off with a story written in The City that is titled, "With the Supreme Court Set to Overturn Roe, New York prepares to become an abortion safe haven." It was written by Jessica Washington of the Fuller Project. And the story was published on May 4th, 2022. May the 4th be with you. In partnership with the city and the Fuller Project. So the subtitle is, "In the wake of a leaked decision by Justice Samuel Alito gutting abortion rights, state lawmakers have introduced measures to expand access for the expected influx of abortion seekers." So the article starts with context, but I'm going to paraphrase it and skip it. But if you want to read the full article, it'll be in the show notes. But if you somehow, well, how about I toss this to you? Akul, what's going on in the world? Do you know what's going on in the world? Specifically relating to Roe v. Wade, because there was a lot going on in the world. Let me scale that back, okay. Actually.
So I can't give exact dates because you know I don't live here. But about, what, a week ago, there was a leaked draft of a decision that from SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, that suggested that they had a decision in favor of overturning Roe versus Wade. The people got a hold of this draft and the world went up.
You essentially got it right. This is a majority decision, the first draft of a majority decision written by Justice Samuel Alito. So it's not the final decision yet. That hasn't happened yet. That is probably set to come down in June or July, but it points towards the fact that they will probably overturn Roe versus Wade. I'm going to put resources to legal podcasts in the show notes if you would like to hear more about the ruling or the potential ruling and the decision and the implications of it being leaked and all that kind of stuff. Back to the article. Advocates and lawmakers in New York quickly mobilized today and that was May 4th, to protect abortion rights inside the state and to cement the state's status as a safe haven for those around the country seeking abortions. Here in New York City, thousands of pro-choice supporters rallied at Foley Square, many wearing green, a color that has become internationally associated with movements for safe and legal abortions. Skipping down a little bit to the more relevant stuff in the article, New York safe haven. So 13 states have trigger laws, which would ban abortion if Roe v. Wade is overturned. And 26 states have abortion laws on the books that are currently blocked by the courts, whose bans could be overturned if Alito's draft opinion becomes the law of the land. In 2019, New York became one of the first states in the nation to codify the right to an abortion, which just means make it legal in law. Lawmakers simultaneously ended the state's ban on abortion after 24 weeks of pregnancy. That same year, the New York City Council voted to fund the New York Abortion Access Fund, NYAAF, which helps low-income New Yorkers and people traveling from out of state to access abortion services. And earlier this year, Assemblymember Jessica Gonzalez-Rojas, who is a Democratic Assemblymember from Queens, and State Senator Samra G. Brooke, who is a Democrat from Monroe/Ontario, which is upstate, introduced legislation that would increase insurance coverage for abortion care in New York State. However, despite the strides New York has made in making the state a safe haven for abortion access, advocates like Sasha Neha Ahua, who organized the protests in Foley Square, say there's a lot more to be done. The fight is at our doorstep, says Ahua.
Me?
Did you think I said Ahua?
Oh. Yeah. I was like, no. Me? I didn't say that.
You sorry. Was there, girl? No, Ahua, sorry. It's not something that New Yorkers can look away from and say, oh, this is happening in Texas and Alabama and Mississippi, she added. We cannot turn a blind eye to what's happening in this country. We have to be a safe place for people to access care. New York has long served as a sanctuary for abortion seekers. In 1970, 3 years before Roe was actually decided, the state legalized abortion, drawing hundreds of thousands of women from across the country seeking safe and legal abortions. With Roe now seemingly on the chopping block, abortion advocates and providers are readying themselves for a similar situation. I'm going to cut to more context on that to a different article, but do you have anything to say about what I've read so far?
I'm writing notes as you're talking.
I saw that.
I had to pull out a paper and a pen. Session, okay. Baby. Reminded me of whenever Nikita RIP would do a word. I'd like, pause. Let me get my pen and paper because I gotta follow this. No, not right now. You can continue.
Nikita, man. All right, we shall continue. So I'm going to cut away from the city article from a little bit. I want to talk about New York pre-Roe and what that looked like, because I was just curious. A nigga wasn't alive for mad long before that.
So. Mad long. Mad long.
No idea. I'm reading for an article in the New York Times called Remembering an Era Before Roe, when New York had the quote-unquote most liberal abortion law. This was written July 19, 2018 by Julia Law. So it reads, 3 years before Roe v. Wade was established as a constitutional right to abortion, New York legalized the procedure in 1970, turning the state into a magnet for women who wanted to terminate their pregnancies, but were barred from doing so where they lived. In the first 2 years after it was passed, health officials estimated more than 400,000 abortions were performed in the state. Nearly two-thirds of those procedures were people who had traveled outside of New York to take advantage of the policy. That's a lot of fucking people.
That's a lot.
It continues, pressed by women's rights activists, three other states, Hawaii, Washington, and Alaska, passed similar laws before Roe was decided in 1973, but they sought to avoid a flood of travelers by requiring people seeking abortions to have lived there for a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. I felt like that, too. I was like, damn. Good to know, though. Back to the city article, Ahua, not to be confused with Akua, suggestions include doubling down on existing laws at the city and state level, including increasing the council's existing spending on abortion access. Since 2020, the council has allocated $250,000 each year to the New York Abortion Action Fund, which I don't know anything about money or this, but I just feel like it's not enough money.
Can you repeat that figure for me again?
$250,000 each year.
250, a quarter mil. Okay.
Mm-hmm. New York City Council had already begun funding abortion outright, said Ahua. Expanding that pot of money is a huge thing that the council can readily do as we anticipate more and more folks seeking access to states like New York. At the state level, efforts are already underway to make sure New York can meet the needs of folks fleeing states with restrictive abortion laws. On Tuesday, Gonzalez Rojas and State Senator Cordell Clear, who's a Democrat from Harlem, introduced companion bills to create a state abortion fund that would ensure that providers get resources through the Department of Health to cover the potential influx of folks coming to the state to receive care. If the Supreme Court overturns Roe, New York State would become the closest abortion provider for roughly 190,000 to 280,000 women out of state, wrote Gonzalez Rojas in a statement. Just from the top of my brain and trying to conceptualize distance, Pennsylvania is not like restrict. There's restrictions, but it's not outlawed. So that's like the closest state with restrictions. Mm-hmm. And the closest state that would be outlawed, I think, is Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah. New York's congressional representatives are also engaged in a fight to protect abortion rights at the federal level. On Tuesday, Democratic State Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who is a Democrat senator from New York, vowed to call a vote to codify Roe v. Wade into law. Quick sidebar to say that that's highly unlikely to happen because Democrats do not hold a large enough majority in the Senate to get it passed. They would need 60 and they don't got it. And in order for them to pass it with the amount of senators who would agree with it now, the filibuster needs to be overturned. But there are two senators who do not fuck with overturning the filibuster. So that's probably not going to happen either. Schumer said a vote on this legislation is not an abstract exercise. At a press conference on Tuesday, this is as urgent and real as it gets. I don't know why he said that. I don't agree with him. I think it is an abstract exercise. I think I've heard him say, I believe, or some other senators who are like, would vote to codify it, say like, this is a chance to like get everybody on record on who's on the wrong side of history. But I don't think anybody cares about that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody of any party particularly cares about that because it's very obvious where everyone's like allegiances lie at this point. As of right now, it's important to remember that the right to abortion is still constitutionally protected, said Gonzalez Rojas, who hopes that the leaked draft will serve as a call to action for residents and senator and legislators alike. So, yeah, we do see that like this protest in Foley Square. I think people were protesting outside of Justice Brett Kavanaugh's house and things like that. So people are like turning up. Calling your representatives in Congress to ask them to codify Roe and donating to local abortion funds are all ways that New Yorkers can help, she said. And I want to add, I want to emphasize that and then also add that now is probably a good time for you to volunteer your time to an already existing abortion fund. And I'm kind of seeing things on social media where like it's like, oh, let me buy up all the abortion pills. But you're just like a random motherfucker from like, I don't know, wherever you live. And like people who have been doing this work for a really long time advise people not to do stuff like that. Like, because how are you going to distribute it? Maybe if you really care, connect with people who have been doing the work for decades upon decades. So I'm going to put a link to the show notes where you can find abortion funds by state. And when you go to those, you can either like try to donate or volunteer your time. I have more to say, but please chime in.
I'm sorry. I wrote down some very silly notes.
Sounds like a cool.
Not even that. You said Democrat from Harlem and bitch, I cackled in my head. I had to keep a straight face. So sorry, but let's get to the actual to the real notes here. Okay. I'm sorry, I just had to write that down. Okay, so I think the only question I have now, and I'm not sure, I wanted to hold on to see if the more you speak, you would answer my questions. Mm-hmm. Right now, my understanding is that if Roe versus Wade is overruled, that that will remove constitutional protection. But then do states, I'm trying to figure out how to, like I wrote state versus federal.
Yeah, so I think I can answer what you're, yeah, go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. So it removes like federal protection for abortion access. So that means like the power goes to the individual state to make the decision.
Thank you. All right. Was that the question. Okay. And then we're talking about New York pre-Roe, mm-hmm. and we New York allowed for abortion in 1970s. Do we know if that was still to like the 24-week mark, or were they
it was a different? It was to the 24-week mark, unless the parent was in like health jeopardy.
Yes.
And then in 2019, we just got rid of that in general.
Okay. And then the first note I made when you brought up the New York Abortion Access Fund, mm-hmm. that clicked into my mind what emergency Medicaid means once you go to like a Planned Parenthood or Choices. So like me, I'm a hoe that used the community clinics when I was a child because I was fucking and my parents didn't know, so I couldn't go to my pediatrician. Mm-hmm. And you would go to a place like Choices or Planned Parenthood or a Women's Health Center. And if you could not pay or provide your insurance, they would sign you up for emergency Medicaid. And now the connection is made of how they got those funds for those emergency Medicaid. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Just peace in my life experience.
Real life experiences with the facts and the stuff to paint a full picture of the story.
All right, keep going.
Okay. All right. So this article made me think about a lot of things. I mean, this is a pretty big event in our lives. So New York is a safe haven and people will come, and there is funding, as Akua just mentioned, allocated to that. But I feel like it will still be unaffordable and unattainable to most. Like, we just don't like that 250 number. I don't know. I don't think like niggas from Ohio can come all the way up here and everybody's just like Gucci or whatever. So
I mean, thinking about it, if you're coming all the way from Ohio, this access fund is only for once you hit in the state and for those medical procedures. And so like you have to find your own way from Ohio to New York. That's number one.
I think it actually does cover. Oh, like travel. Okay. Because it said people traveling from out of state, I just mm-hmm. took that to mean their travel expenses, but yes, no, you are right.
You got to get to New York first from motherfucking Ohio, and then it's covering just the procedure and the things that people need to.
Yes, that's a good
point. So then, like, I agree with you. That $250,000 is not.
Yeah, either of what we're talking about, I don't think that's enough.
It's
money.
Not going to do it.
Although there are like other like outside of NYAAF abortion like care organizations that do try to make up for the cost for people to travel from state to state. Careful. But I don't mm-hmm. think that this one does that.
No.
Either way, we don't got it. Either way,
we don't.
Either way, it's, the pocketbook is broke right now. It's bunny ears.
When you said the figure of 190,000 women times the price of an abortion, let's say it's $500. Like, the math is not math.
If we do it the opposite way, if we do like the $250,000 divided by 90 women, is like what, $2? We giving out $2 like, abortion. Like, you can't even get on the bus with that. You can't even get on the actual MTA with that.
You can't even get on the MTA with $2. Like, the math is not math. I'm sorry.
You could become a Patreon and that's it for $2.
For $2. That's all you're getting in New York. That's all you're getting.
You could become a Bag Ladies IHURT with Queen and Jay Patreon.
That is $1.32, Samantha.
Like, so yeah, we have established that this is not enough money. So this made me think about like what the underground abortion networks will look like, because if people can't mm-hmm. travel from state to state or whatever, they got to do it where they at, and what does that look like. So a lot of people have been giving that and a lot of my brain goes too far ahead of what I'm saying. So a lot of people have been saying that this will bring back coat hanger back alley abortions. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people who work very closely in the reproductive rights space have been saying that's fear mongering. That's not exactly what's happening now. And we have models for what safe and illegal abortions look like. So I was like, what the fuck does that look like?
Yeah.
So I did my little Googles and I came across an article called Inside the 1970s Abortion Underground, published by Dylan Jones on May 6, 2022 in Politico, which is actually the same publication that leaked the draft. So they did an interview with someone named Laura Kaplan. In 1971, Laura Kaplan joined a clandestine network called Jane that provided thousands of illegal abortions in Chicago. With Roe v. Wade on the chopping block, she looks back on those days. So I'm just going to read a little excerpt of what she had said and then a little bit more about the Janes. So Kaplan said, lots of women came along in the later days of Jane. A lot of the women we saw were more poor women of color on the west side and south side of Chicago because our information had really spread in those neighborhoods. And Jones, the interviewer, said, and by that time, wealthy women were able to travel to D.C. or New York or somewhere they could get a legal abortion. And Kaplan said, that's right. It wasn't just poor women who couldn't travel, though. You had young women, women who were in relationships that were controlling and abusive, so they couldn't leave town. She doesn't mention this, but like women who already have kids and can't get childcare. I think the metric is, I don't know what the exact number is, but I think it's like most people who get abortions already have kids. And she continues, I mean, there's a panoply of different reasons why somebody couldn't get on a plane. But for a lot of poor women, it was like there's no other way. Going to the north side from the west side was already going to another country, which we can relate.
We can relate.
Queens to the Bronx is a baby. That's a fucking trek. That's a trek. So I really appreciated reading this. It reminded me of that conversation from a couple of weeks ago that we were having about the hormone selling drug dealer and what it looks like to operate outside of the system and all that kind of stuff. So I looked more into the Janes and I found on Wikipedia, the Jane Collective, or Jane, officially known as Abortion Counseling Service of Women's Liberation, was an underground service in Chicago, Illinois, affiliated with Chicago Women's Liberation Union that operated from 1969 to 1973, a time when abortion was illegal in most of the United States, as we know. The foundation of the organization was laid when Heather Booth helped her friend's sister obtain a safe abortion in 1965, other people with unwanted pregnancies began to contact Booth after learning via word of mouth that she could help them. When the workload became more than what she could manage, she reached out to other activists in the women's liberation movement. The collective sought to address the increasing number of unsafe abortions being performed by untrained providers. I think the mob was like into it, which I'm not surprised to hear, but fun fact, since illegal abortions were not only dangerous but very expensive, the founding members of the collective believed that they could provide people with safer and more affordable access to abortions, really doing the people's work. Initially, the organization directed the pregnant people to male doctors. After a few years, however, they learned that one of their most used doctors had lied about having medical credentials. It's like, men just lie. Because he wasn't even doing a bad job. He was doing it right. He was just lying. This created a conflict in the group. This created a conflict in the group, causing some members to leave. Others realized that if a man without medical credentials could perform a safe abortion, then they could learn as well. A few of their numbers learned how to perform surgical abortions with the dilation and curettage. Am I saying that right? Okay. A method most commonly used. Members of the group performed an estimated 11,000 abortions, mostly to low-income people who could not afford to travel to places where abortion was legal, as well as people of color. In the 7 years that the group existed, they performed an estimated 11,000 abortions. I just said that there were no reports of abortion-related death as a result of their work. So it was literally safe and illegal abortions. Mm-hmm. Anything to say about that?
My brain is just trying to conceptualize how this is happening, just because I don't know how the world is actually happening. So when you're talking about something that is underground and most of the world don't, that I'm just like, how are they getting the supplies? How are they, like, did it fall off a truck? Like, who knows who's the plug?
Like niggas make do. And this is gender neutral and race neutral niggas. But
when we talk about like dark web, like things underground, my brain just doesn't understand how to make the connections.
I've
never seen it. But like, let me hurry up and go be a nurse practitioner so I can be prescribing these pills. Like, let me do what I gotta do to help.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it too. And like, I wanted to take a moment to talk about that one, because I saw a lot of people in Repro Rights were like, stop saying the coat hanger shit, we not doing that. And I was like, okay, heard you not ever gonna spread that misinformation again.
Got it.
But like, to cart back to the don't reinvent the wheel thing, like nothing is new under the sun. Like our ancestors and like four mothers, four people, four sisters, four siblings have been doing the shit. They just been doing the shit. So like the foundations and the frameworks are already there. We just need to like actually tap into it instead of like having this sort of like, oh, let's start from scratch. And then niggas like are locked out of care. This also, so when people talk about the safety thing, they also point to abortion medication or abortion pills. And I was like, okay, what's the status on that now? Like, how does that fit into this whole framework? So now I want to read from an article in Now This called Anti-Abortion Lawmakers Gear Up to Target the Abortion Pill Next, because the fight is relentless. This is written by Talia Smith, published May 5th, 2022. Abortion pills, it reads, abortion pills now account for more than half of U.S. abortions, according to the New York Times. Straight up, did not know that. Didn't even know it was that prominent. With access to, yeah, go ahead.
I do want to say that, like, most people know they're pregnant after their first period, 4 weeks to eight, like, no, to 8 weeks. That is prime time for the abortion pill. DNCs are for a later term. Pregnancy. So most people, more than half, are doing the pill. Like that's the option you're given.
Makes sense. Makes total sense. Thank you. With access to abortion on the Supreme Court on the chopping block, many advocates fear that these safe alternatives might be next to go. So last year, the FDA lifted a standard that required women to pick up abortion pills in person and now allows for nationwide delivery through mail. As Republican majority states like South Dakota, Texas, Kentucky, Arkansas, Ohio, Tennessee, and Oklahoma continue to impose abortion bans, many people have begun the process of traveling cross-state to fill prescriptions in states that do not have heavy abortion restrictions or utilizing international online pharmacies. In an interview with the Associated Press, Sue Liebel, which is so funny because it sounds like liberation, but she's an asshole. State policy director for Susan B. Anthony List, a notable anti-abortion organization, said cross-border trips, remote doctor consultations, and pill deliveries are what they will be trying to stop next. Already, we're beginning to see ways in which lawmakers are trying to curb abortions performed without the direct role of a provider. As of today, 19 states require a physician to be physically present when abortion pills are being administered. On Wednesday, the time of this was written, the Louisiana House advanced a bill that would allow pregnant people and anyone who helps in terminating a pregnancy be charged directly with homicide. This means pregnant people who are administering their own pills could be charged on counts of murder. And to me, that meant, and I'm not familiar with how the law works at all, but to me, that meant that like telemedicine services that would be granting people access in these states are just straight up like, nah, we don't want those problems. So they're just not going to do it. And then I started to think like, what does, you know, how does that like apply to pre-Roe and now post-Roe America or whatever, like how we had these underground networks to get people surgical abortions. Do we now have underground networks to like smuggle effectively like contraband abortion pills?
Now, this was my thinking, and in the overturning of Roe versus Wade, I automatically thought that would like cancel out abortion pills as well. Like, I didn't like, does Roe versus Wade only protect surgical abortions? Because in my mind, yeah, that was going to be a part of it.
I think it's that. So like Roe being overturned removes the federal protection. So all the states that had their laws on the books, those were unconstitutional because of that ruling.
Yes.
Now those laws are constitutional, but did those laws have abortion pills in the laws in the first place?
Ah, thank you, because in 1973.
Yeah. So if these were written a long time ago, they got to like update it to
So yeah. I also want to make the note, just so that we're clear, that abortion pills are not the same as Plan B.
Please, thank you. Thank you for saying that, because the misinformation is already spreading.
It is not the same as Plan B. Does not mean they're not going to come and take our Plan B next, but it is not the same as Plan B. Abortion pills are medications you take once pregnancy is confirmed to help spontaneously discharge the cells out of your body. Plan B is medications, really hormone, I think it's higher levels of like progesterone that dysregulate your hormones that will help you decrease the likelihood of actually conceiving and getting pregnant if you have sperm inside your body yes. and an egg that can connect with it.
You are 100% right. I'm glad that you said that. Quick tangent into Misinformationville. There is somebody who's running for fucking some congressional seat or some shit like that, who put out a tweet like yesterday or today, who was like, Tennessee just banned Plan B. All throughout her, that's not true. Like, mm-hmm. somebody pushed a bill forward to ban these abortion pills, not Plan B. Mm-hmm. But people run with the misinformation. Oh, of course, da-da-da-da-da. And a whole bunch of people are correcting this person, saying, like what you just said, like, sure, they probably will come for Plan B next, but that's not true. Why are you saying that? Remove this tweet for misinformation. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's why I just, like, don't fuck with misinformation at all.
I know.
Like, this person is, like, a leftist, and they're running on, like, our side, quote unquote, but, like, they're really running for themselves. Like, they're doing this as a selfish thing to, like, mm-hmm. boost their clout in order to get public office. Like, they don't actually mm-hmm. care about the safety of individuals who can get pregnant, because now if you, like, have a slip up or something like that, or an accident occurs, now you're like, I don't want to go to the pharmacy to get Plan B because I saw that tweet.
Exactly.
So, like, why? What was the reason?
What was the reason?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's talk a little bit. Anything more to say about that before I move on to the next thing?
Nope. You can go ahead.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about trans healthcare and maybe what those networks will need to look like as well. Mm-hmm. So we, on the season finale of last season, spoke all about the link between banning of reproductive freedoms and gender freedoms for trans folks last season. It's the fact that these ideologies are backed and funded by the exact same people. They're horrible.
Yes, I remember
that. They hate women.
Wow.
They hate trans people. They're racist. It's all bad. I'll link it in the show notes. But yeah, so.
That was a mind fuck. I was like, wow. I'm sorry.
But as we can see, months later, these things are occurring in tandem. But because this country is so fucking transphobic, like, sure, there's people like who are like not talking enough about the abortion thing, but it's covered. No coverage of the trans shit. So it's a very relevant time to say that as all this has been happening, as of today, what day is this as we're recording it? May 8th, 2022. Alabama has enacted a felony ban on gender-affirming care for trans youth. It's just straight up a felony. You could go to jail. You could go to jail for trying to get your kid access to puberty blockers, because if they feel like they don't have access to that, they have suicidal ideations. It is a felony to take care of your kid.
I'm trying to keep my baby alive, and you gonna tell me I'm going to jail, but then you telling us we gotta have the babies. What you want me to do? Which one is it? You want kids or you don't?
When people say America is a death cult, I think that is what they're referring to.
And mind you, if you are, let's say you are a parent whose child does attempt or die by suicide. Now they're going to throw you in jail for child neglect and endangerment. So you just want me into jail. That's what you're telling me. You just ain't.
That is actually it.
There's no way I can get out of the jail. Is what you tell. If I have kids, I'm going to jail. That's what you're telling me.
That's exactly it.
If I have kids, I'm going to jail. If I don't want the kids, I'm going to jail. I'm going to jail.
Okay. Period. Period.
Period.
I'm going to read a little bit from an article called Alabama's Ban on Medical Treatments for Transgender Minors Starts Today. And it was written today, May 8th, 2022, in AL.com by Mike Kasson. A new Alabama law banning certain medical treatments for minors with gender dysphoria takes effect today unless a federal judge grants a request to put a temporary hold on it while a lawsuit is pending. Have not heard that from that judge. So as of right now that we recorded it, U.S. District Judge Lyles Burke said Friday he and his staff were devoting all their time to prepare an order, but did not say how or when he would rule. Alabama's law is the first in the country to actually take effect. The Alabama Vulnerable Child Compassion and Protection Act makes it a felony, just the opposite of what it is, makes it a felony to provide puberty blockers, hormones, and surgeries for the purpose of helping transgender minors, which is actually people under 19. So 18-year-olds, like, you're still a minor, apparently, under this law, even though you can go to war. Interesting. Transition to the gender they identify with. Violators of the law would face a penalty of up to 10 years in prison.
10?
It's a felony felony.
It's a felony felony. Like, 10?
It's prison time.
Y'all want... Can we go back to the name of that? Because please read the name of that act. I got a problem.
The Alabama Vulnerable Child Compassion and Protection Act. VCCPA.
Nah, y'all didn't write that down and was serious. Y'all didn't write that. Y'all didn't name it that and was dead ass. Like you.
But it's
you
like, that's the whole playbook though. Like the you know, whenever you see those like, oh, we've released a study about how being gay is bad, and it'd be from like the Family Defense Fund, like all this kind of like, we care about the family, we care about the children type shit.
Oh my gosh.
No, 10 you don't.
Years?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't have a good conclusion to this segment, but I wanted to paint a realistic picture of what now and the future will look like and how resistance might show up. So this, like, because poor people in Alabama, all they can't come up for puberty blockers same way they can't come up for an abortion. So I do think that, I don't know, I just...
And no, people cannot just get up and move.
Yeah, no, they can't.
And New York don't got space. We barely got space for the people we got now. We can't take nobody else in.
People can't get up and move, and I'm not saying that electoral politics couldn't have helped this in the past, because I actually think that it could. Like, I think that if Trump didn't win the election in 2016, that we wouldn't be having this Roe v. Wade problem, because he wouldn't have appointed those justices or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that it's going to help us now. Like, I think we're at the too late point. I think we're in the palliative care phase, you know, like we can't chemo it out anymore. That was a dark reference, but
oh my God.
I'm pulling from real life experiences, nigga. I'm sorry.
What?
Like, I think we gotta treat the disease. It's already spread, bro. I don't know what else to say.
Sam said we on hospice, y'all. That's it. We just got to make ourselves comfortable, and we just got to prepare to go.
We got to prepare for what's actually happening instead of like, I don't.
Oh, my God.
Like when the person Rojas, like, I like that Rojas was like, donate to your abortion fund. But when she was like, call your congressperson. First of all, I'm in New York, so those niggas are already going to vote in the right direction.
Exactly.
And if I was in Alabama, they'd be like, bitch, fuck you and your black ass.
They would send the cops to your
black
house
trans
for harassing.
Ass. Yeah.
They would send the cops to you for harassing a political official and put you in the jail.
Like, so I don't really know.
So who am I supposed to call and write a letter to?
Yeah, I don't.
When these are the antics they're going to pull.
I think we need money, and we need people doing the work at this point, personally.
Yes, we need money and people doing the work. All right, let's move on to some laughs. Baby! Sam said we on hospice, y'all. I can't do it.
Oh, I couldn't think of a better analogy.
No, okay. But that was the right analogy. It's just the fact that it's so, like, when you put it in such realistic terms, it's like, yo, wow. Like, I'm so optimistic that it's not realistic, and you just was like, no, here is reality, bitch.
It's not a give up, though. It's not doomerism.
It's not.
But it's, you gotta take it.
We really gotta get up and run. Like, we gotta get up and get moving, because it's not getting any better. Like,
right, exactly. It will get worse. It's not over.
Yes,
you don't have to stop, but it will get worse if you don't do anything. All right, let's end with fuck is this. We keep punting this fuck you. I'm so sorry, but I have a lot to say about abortion. We'll do it next week.
Oh my God, what is that? Oh my God, what is that?
Let's go into fuck is this. This is a moment to discuss, rant about, or laugh at the nonsense in the realm of sex, love, and dating. Up first... Apparently, 4-year-old Megan Fox manifested Machine Gun Kelly.
No, I don't want, no. No.
Wait, that's not even a segment. That's not the yes or no segment.
It's going to have to be, because I read that headline and I said, no. I said, I'm not doing this with this white woman. I'm not doing it. But please tell us more, because my whole reaction, I scrolled and I said no, and I kept scrolling. I'm not doing this with you. The fuck is you talking about? But please share with you. Please share with us what they were talking
fucking
about.
Fucking dead. Oh, man. I like Megan Kelly. Oh, I always say that. That's the other one. That's the actual racist white woman. I like Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly because, like, they just tell us they're bullshit. And it's like, oh, okay. Let me escape from the real world and just, like, look at your bullshit for a little bit. When she was younger, Megan Fox wasn't like other kids. I'm not like other girls type ass. Mm-hmm. At 4 years old, while her peers were risking ringworm in sandboxes and playing tag at recess, the actress was busy manifesting her now fiance, Machine Gun Kelly. In an interview with Glamour UK, Fox explains her theory, saying, "He's literally my exact type that I've been manifesting since I was four. I'm also 4 years older than him, so I think I made him. My thoughts and intentions grew..." My thoughts and
my girl said, "My man not born yet. Don't worry."
That's my man. My thoughts and intentions grew him into the person that he is. Who knows that he would have looked like? Who knows what he would have looked like or been like if it wasn't for me?
I feel like that's big dick energy. Parents.
That's the biggest dick energy. That's big strap energy.
No, that is foolishness.
Fuck his parents. Fuck his whole lineage, son. It was me.
It was me. When I was four, I said, "I want a nigga covered in tattoos that's going to drink my blood." And I just kept saying it. I just kept saying it. And today, she instilled those values just by thinking about it.
The fact that they drink each other's blood is, oh, man. But that's like, that's the white people that I want. I want my white people to be white. I don't want them to be all this fucking Jack Harlow, "Oh, sweetie, what's up" type shit. I want my white men to be white, nigga. Not racist, just white.
That's white. Doing your white shenanigans.
Exactly. Okay, I think that we can move on from that. I don't care what else it says. Here we go. I'm going to put, I don't want to screen share because, you know, my computer gets all fucked up, but... This is for Akua specifically. Where's the chat? Where's the Zoom chat? Chat. There we go. Okay. The caption for this tweet is "The funniest image in television history." And Akua is gonna click, and we're gonna see what Akua has to say.
What am I looking at?
Explain.
Okay. It is a Simpsons looking character. He's balding with glasses, shorts, and a red shorts, white tank top, and he's gesturing to a car bed, like the one for toddlers, the one that looks like a vehicle.
Cool, you know why I'm showing you that image?
Oh, shit!
Every 5 years, every 2 to 3 years, I'm gonna bring it up. No one knows what we're talking about.
I'm gonna pull some context in for y'all. So, back in our younger years, at the beginning of this podcast, I was fucking with niggas and writing in to tell Sam about it.
Before she was a co-host.
Before I was a co-host. I was always creating content.
Always
y'all.
A producer. Always a producer.
And there was this one gentleman I was talking to, probably met him on an online app.
It was probably Plenty of Fish, to be honest.
It was plenty of fish energy. Hoo child. And this young man invited me to his home, and long story short, in his home, in his bedroom, he lived in what was his childhood bedroom. It was still lavender blue, and his bed was a crib. It was one of those convertible crib to toddler to twin size beds, and he was a grown man, had to be like 21, grown, big as hell, like 6 feet, in this toddler ass bed. And I let him eat my pussy in the crib. I let him eat my pussy in that bed. He wasn't gonna get to fuck.
Yeah, but you did.
I sure did let that man eat my pussy in the
crib. Fucking love that story. Good for you.
Shit.
Good for you. I'm happy with the life that we've lived. More life, but it's been good. It's been good.
Oh, shit.
Okay. All right. I don't think we have time for cyborg sex hands. There's a lot of description, but I'm going to skip to the men who wrote the Constitution's Constitution. All right. There's a tweet tweeted by @fansince09 who wrote... Okay, basically the person like wrote this because everybody's like... Oh, our founding fathers didn't have abortion in mind when they wrote the Constitution and all that kind of stuff, like kind of revering them. So this person at FanSince09 wrote, Governor Morris, who wrote the final draft of the Constitution, died because he put a whale bone up his dick. I think it's okay to edit the document. The Constitution.
I think it is. I too agree. Thank you for that fun fact.
These are our founding fathers. And he was actually, as I think FanSince09 goes on to say, one of the more like liberal founding fathers. Like, he was a vocal abolitionist. He spoke out against the South's power, all that kind of stuff. But when he had a urinary blockage, he thought it was a good idea to put a whalebone up his dick. Or even a whalebone.
Let me not, because I feel like this is more of a kink. So let us not kink shame.
Kink? He did it to clear out a urinary blockage.
That's what he said in his will, girl. But that ain't what he was doing. The same way people come to the ER and say they don't know how it got up there. You're not going to sit here and tell me. I'm Googling it too.
Let's rewrite. We're giving him the Missy Elliott treatment. I don't care what you actually said. It's this.
It is called urethral sounding. Pursuit of sexual satisfaction has led to an emerging practice among men known as urethral sounding. The practice involves inserting an object or a fluid into the urethra. The aim is to enhance sexual pleasure by encouraging your partner to explore your penis in several ways. This is according to WebMD. There's also a Vice article that says, that's titled, if you stick things in your pee hole, awful things will happen. Ooh. So
he didn't have Vice back then, though. Poor Governor Morris. Poor Governor. I think that Governor Morris, he knew that it was within his rights to stick a whalebone up his dick. And I think that if he were alive today,
that is his dick.
If he were alive today, he would agree that it is within our rights to get abortions.
Okay. And this opinion that our forefathers knew what was best and so they wrote it down. These are the same forefathers that believed in slavery. These are the same forefathers we were enslaved, we couldn't vote, we were property, they were selling off their own children that they had with their enslaved people off to other people. That's the people you want to follow? We selling off babies?
But to these racist motherfuckers, it's like, yeah, that is the people we want to follow.
Yeah,
love them niggas. Those are our
making
forefathers.
America great again. Those are our niggas.
Exactly. Those are not our niggas, but those are their niggas. OD their niggas. Well, right. That's been an episode.
From tweet that's been to a buildings. Wild
Yeah, that
ride.
Was a lot. That was a lot in an hour.
If you made it through to this point, thank you. Thank you.
Ups and downs, yo. Just like life, though. It'd be like that sometimes. It's just... Well, if this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate every single last one of yous.
If you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. You can definitely head over to InahoUprising.com to pay a ho or cop that really cute animal do be gay shirt and other merch. You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl on Instagram.
I'm SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. Have a lovely motherfucking week because you deserve to. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.